Welcome to Alpha Trader. Our guest today is Jack Boroujian, Chief Economist and Co-Founder of UCX and Chairman of the Global Smart Commodity Group. Jack, welcome back to Alpha Trader.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
It's great to have you back here. So we are talking Monday. It's President's Day. U.S. markets are closed, having hit record highs for the major averages last week. Chinese markets also closed for Lunar New Year, but there's a lot going on around the world. Japan's Nikkei exceeding 30,000 for the first time since 1990.
Wow.
Crude, WTI above $60 for the first time since January 2020. Bitcoin approached 50,000 over the weekend. It's down a little bit now, but still, I'll call it elevated. And MSCI Global Index up 11 straight days. Obviously, you know, heady times here for the markets, Jack. So it's great to have you here in a day when markets are, at least here in the U.S., closed. We can step back a little bit. What is your sense of where we're at right here? You know, there's a lot of people out there saying, hey, we're in a bubble. You can make a case that some of the froth has come off in the last week or so in some of the cannabis stocks and the micro stocks that had been going gangbusters, the Reddit stocks, some of the air has come out of there. Where are we at in your mind in terms of the big picture here?
There's one underlying theme that has taken a hold of this marketplace, even with the insanity that we've seen with the GameStop insanity and everything else that's been going on. And that is the Federal Reserve, what the Fed is saying, what they are doing, and where they are projecting rates to be in another couple of years. And I'm going to get that to that in a second. They are force-feeding inflation into the economy. I call it the foie gras method, all right? They have got our throats open, and they are stuffing it down our throats, whether we like it or not. Now here is the real problem, all right? On the one hand, you know, they're looking at this monster called deflation. It's so ironic because as a child, I remember inflation being the big problem. And, you know, we could see a little bit of that creeping in. But it's not inflation that keeps central bankers up at night. It's deflation. Remember, you know, if this doesn't work, let's kind of re-engineer this whole question. If it doesn't work that the Fed is out there pumping away as much and dropping helicopter dollars, all right, we are going to be, well, we'll be in one of two places. Either it'll be an inflationary spiral and we'll see it start to get a little out of control, or we will be where Japan was back when you just mentioned the Nikkei not approaching these levels since 1990. I was an officer of Nikko Securities back then. I remember it very well. I remember the Nikkei going up to 39,000 and their central bank, the Bank of Japan, taking rates down to basically zero to try to keep the market up. They were dealing with a lot of bad debt. Loans were on the books of these banks that were becoming ghost banks. And what happened is that the Nikkei went from 39,000 to under 10,000. It did not work. They went into a deflationary spiral. I try to point that out to people because that is a worst case scenario if it doesn't work. Now, if it does work, then we're going to be basically where we were back in the 30s to the 50s. You know, when soybeans went from 39 cents a bushel in 1932 to $4 in a bushel in 1952. And there was nothing different about soybeans, nothing different about the protein count, the yield per acre or anything else. But it took 10 times the amount of U.S. currency to buy the same amount of soybeans. Well, that was because we inflated our way out of a world war, or inflated our way out of a depression. Hey, does it sound familiar? So those are our two scenarios. And, you know, it's a little scary, I'll tell you guys. I tell this to my own children. I said, you know, like my son's talking to me about the stock market and how euphoric it is and how great it is and his friends are making all this money. I said, well, you know what? That sounds so much like the late 90s to me that it actually, and I even said to him, remember this time, because there's going to be a time where, you know, that pendulum swings the other way and you're going to have to remember it, because then when it's swinging back, you're going to have to remember how to be able to act during that time.
Speaking of the late 90s, I remember you back in those days on CNBC, maybe let's go mid-90s, let's say starting 95, 96, 97, and you were resolute. Everybody was calling it a bubble then. You were resolute that good stuff is happening in the economy, good stuff is happening with creative destruction, and there were really good reasons for that the market was rising day after day after day. I'm hearing a little bit of a different tune from you now that you know, maybe there are not so wholesome reasons for the market to be going up.
Well, I actually felt that way a couple of years ago. Prior to the pandemic, I kept saying that we've got this digital age that's upon us. And I was very, very bullish. In fact, you know, what's happened over the course of the last 10 months has sped up everything that I was expecting over the course of the next 3 to 5 years. Well, you know, that's good and bad. On the one hand, you know, what it does is it creates quite a bit of volatility and it starts to suck people in, you know, and we'll get into that in a second. But remember what was happening in the late 90s. We were seeing not only a dot-com bubble, but we were seeing an internet age. We were seeing the shift, you know, and just a quick anecdote to that time in my life. I remember it was 1997, 98. I was on the board of directors of CME Group sitting next to Merton Miller, of all people, who was a Nobel laureate from the University of Chicago. And he turned to me and he said, you know, Jack, I don't understand this internet thing. All right, is what he said to me. All right. And then he said, but then again, what do I know? All right. He goes, when they invented the steam engine, it was invented to pump water out of coal mines. No one thought it would be good for anything else. And, you know, it was those words of wisdom just kind of rung in my head. Did we see the market get way out of line in 99, late 99, 2000? Absolutely. And that is where I'm feeling. That's the same feeling I'm getting now. When I start to hear people that have no business being in the market or have not studied the market, all of a sudden telling me how easy it is to make money in stocks, that worries me. That tells me that we're frothy. That concerns me. And, you know, and I always tell people, you know, there are no minor leagues. You know, you're in there in the major leagues. You're dealing with people that are running billions, if not trillions of dollars. And they're a lot smarter than you. So you better know what you're doing. You know, so when you're buying GameStop at 400, you better know what you're doing. All right. Because it seems like there is just so much insanity out there. So, you know, going back to my original statement, you know, everybody is absolutely convinced that the market's going up now. Everybody's convinced that the Fed is going to keep rates low. So what is the black swan? What would happen, right, for them for it to not? And that would be for deflation to take hold, all right, in what seems to be already an inflationary cycle taking off. That is what I would worry about. All right. I don't see it happening yet. Don't get me wrong, all right? But if there's ever anything that's going to worry me, that's going to be it.
And so interesting, a lot to unpack there. And you answered the question I was going to ask about, you know, whether you think we are in a 1999 type environment. So you think you do. Let's not debate that for this moment. But I'm recalling you were last year, and I can't believe it's been this long, since in June of 2020. It seems like a lifetime ago. But at the time, you said you were reluctantly long with a small L, and you called yourself a nervous long. So yeah. How are you positioned here? Are you positioned like this market is, you know, is peaking and we're about to have a big leg down? How are you positioned?
I just, because you asked that question last week, I started looking at inverse ETFs to the downside just to protect the position, because quite frankly, it's gone up so much that, you know, now you're looking at a position, whether it's in your retirement account, whether it's sitting in your just personal portfolio, and you're saying to yourself, all right, now I've got to be smart. You know, look, depending on how old you are, you know, we used to say on the floor of the exchange, you got bulls, you got bears, and you got hogs, and hogs get slaughtered.
Right.
And so make sure that you use sound judgment and you're wise. All right. Wisdom when the markets are going up is so very important, because everybody feels like a genius. All right. When the market is going higher. So you have to step back and use a little market wisdom and market sense. And I think that's really what separates what I would call a professional trader from the smaller retail trader.
Right. So just to drill down a little bit on this. So you're using inverse ETFs for protection. That to me sounds like a hedge of long positions, as opposed to you're actively shorting this market, or you've gone to all cash or something like that.
No. I'm hedging my market. You know, remember that until the Fed gives us a signal, all right, that they are going to do anything different than just keep that spigot open, all right, then you know what? We have to ride this crest. We can't fight the Fed, all right? I mean, that was the one lesson that I have learned over the course of the 35 years that I've been in the markets, is when the Fed is doing something, go with it. Do not fight them. And right now, you have central bank that is basically telling you what they're doing. He's giving you a projection. He's giving you a bullseye, all right, of where he wants. And he's even telling you, you know what, he's hoping that we're seeing, you know, more than 2% inflation. So, you know, now when we're looking at things, look at crude oil. Crude oil now is at $60, and we don't even have air travel back yet.
Yep.
So
right.
So we're going to see a pop, some inflationary pressure come in. And the real question is, what's the velocity of that? And how will the Fed act when that happens? Because that'll determine whether we're going to end up fighting the deflationary bug in another 5 years. And that's really the question when you're looking at it from a macroeconomic standpoint. All right. Is it this quick jolt of inflation? Is it going to be sustainable because we know it's all coming? Or is it going to be a head fake? And if it's a head fake, then we're heading into a Japan scenario.
And it's not just crude oil. It's we've got beans in the teens again, which I don't know if I've seen for a while. And silver's jiggy. Bitcoin, of course, which is thought of by the hodlers as gold 2.0, as Aaron mentioned, almost going through $50,000 this week. I know you're in a venture that you're involved with. You're into the blockchain as it relates to commodities. Do you have an opinion on Bitcoin and whether it actually is gold 2.0?
You know what? I think Bitcoin is got a place in people's portfolio. I've been saying this now for a couple of years. I think that, is it gold 2.0? I see it as a store of value, but I see it differently than I see gold. Remember, you know, with Bitcoin, you've got a certain amount of coins that are out there that can be mined, period. Whereas gold, I mean, you know, they've been mining gold for the last, 5,000 years, and they continue to mine it. So for me, there's a whole different relationship there. What's really important is the adoption of cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, all of which will make capital efficiencies. That's really the key here. So when you just talked about our venture, well, with the Global Smart Commodity Group, what we're doing is we've created seamless pre-transactional verification and then a seamless settlement using a stablecoin tied to the US dollar. All right. So now there's no volatility with that crypto, but it gives you what we would call that smart contract feature, which gives everybody absolute assurance from seed to sale to delivery to futures, all the way through maintaining the provenance, proving where the origin of that product actually came from. And why is it important? Well, quite frankly, we went from an anti-China sentiment to an anti-China strategy. So people do not want to see rare earth elements coming out of China. In fact, if anything, supply chains are going to be so very important, and proving that supply chain will be even more important. Now, you couple that with the fact that right now, if you ever take delivery on anything at the exchange level, whether you take delivery on corn, soybeans, dairy products, more than likely, it's not exactly to your spec. And what will happen is, based on that, you'll probably get a credit or a debit, depending on the quality, from the exchange, who acts as an intermediary for the producer. Well, all of that needs to change. That's so antiquated, all right? What you need to know and what we've brought to the world is absolute assurance on a single source of truth, so that now you know exactly what you've got right when it's been planted all the way through that process, so that when you do take delivery, we're taking delivery on the right product. So we started with hemp. We're going to move to marijuana. We think that I think hemp is just one of the most amazing things in the world with the uses for it. And I see that as the 1,000-pound gorilla in the whole cannabis industry down the road. And marijuana, quite frankly, is, I see the opioid epidemic is, if nothing else, the sole reason why people should be looking at marijuana as a substitute for pain.
So on that topic, when you talk about hemp, you're talking about it for industrial purposes, I assume?
Both industrial and medical. People like the CBD, CBG, CBNs. But I look at the fiber. I'm looking at the various other products, hempcrete. I talked to a company that is going to be using the biomass from hemp to create hydrogen cells. Those hydrogen cells will actually be pumped into concrete. And if anybody saw Bill Gates on TV yesterday, he was talking about concrete that was going to actually be very, very environmentally friendly. That's exactly the type of things that I would see the use of hemp for. Hemp's got some very interesting qualities. And I don't know if you know the history of it, but basically it was the cotton farmers who ended up making hemp illegal. Hemp was the actual chosen plant for the colonists. It was used for everything. So I find that fascinating. But as I dig into it, and remember, I'm one of these guys, if I dig into something, I go in full force. And the more I got into it, the more I realized that if we did this right, this could be bigger than everything else that we are looking at in the agricultural markets.
Yeah, I mean, I love the little history lesson you just shared. I mean, it's sort of like how the big three automakers like got rid of mass transportation on the West Coast, which is why there's so much traffic in LA now. They tore up the rails, and you know, so everybody would drive a car, and now we have this huge problem of how to get people around more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And but that, you know, that's probably not for this podcast. That's another podcast. But I find it very interesting. But you know, for Alpha Trader, what are your thoughts on the publicly traded cannabis stocks here, which, as I referenced earlier, you know, got into the sights of the Reddit crowd a couple of weeks ago, had a big move up. There seemed to be some of the air came out of them at the end of last week. Are you long any of them? Do you trade those names? What are your thoughts there?
I do own them, but I own them from lower. I don't like this Reddit thing. I'll be honest with you. And you know what? I got my fellow Armenian who created Reddit. So, you know, I don't want to talk bad about it, but it feels to me like the chat rooms that we used to have in the late 90s where people were just pumping things up.
Yep.
And I remember, I would just shake my head at some of these comments because people didn't understand valuation or they didn't understand market structure. And that's what would always bother me. And in many ways, I'm feeling the same thing happening there. But as far as the cannabis stocks go, I think that you know, if you buy them on dips. These are very speculative stocks and obviously very, very volatile. What I don't like is when they run up $30, $40, $50 and you've got people buying that rally. You know, you can't get into the fear of missing out mentality when we're talking about these volatile stocks. If you miss it, you miss it. It's as simple as that. You know, as my father used to tell me, you can't kiss all the girls. All right. So that's just it. You know, so you hope to do that. I like Seymour's ETF. I think that's, you know, that's one way to play it because, you know, especially when the markets are going down, you can diversify your risk with that. But I'm more of the picks and shovels kind of guy. I want to sell the industry what it needs. There are a lot of choke points within this industry, you know, whether it be payments, whether it be testing, whether it be cultivation, manufacturing, you know, transportation. All these pain points need to be addressed, you know, whether it be through an index, whether it be through, you know, an actual, you know, data capture. So all of that needs to be done. And that's kind of where we're coming from with this new concept. But going back to it, I'm a big fan of the marijuana stocks. I like them. I own them. And quite frankly, I've got a feeling that in another 5 years, they're going to be an even bigger story.
Right. So can you talk any particular names? And as I was talking about, you know, the air being let out, I was thinking about what happened in Tilray. And now I'm looking at a chart. You know, it was trading in the teens at the beginning of the year. It went over $63 last week, and now it's, you know, back under 30. So, I mean, that was a 50% huge... Yeah. I mean, the crazy, crazy time kind of moves. And you, to your other point about Reddit, you know, you made a great point about the old chat rooms. And we had Randy Frederick here from Charles Schwab last week. He made a very similar point. He basically said, it's a lot like that, except in those days, it was limited to, you know, certain people in a club. Now, it's, you know, hundreds of millions of people in theory all over the world in the same chat room, quote unquote, talking about the same stocks. And so the multiplier effect is really evident there. But he made a similar point that it's very reminiscent of those, you know, chat rooms from the late 1990s.
Well, I think the chat rooms in the late 1990s, as crazy as it might've been, served a purpose. All right. What I don't like, And this is one thing that we have to really pay attention to, is delegitimizing the markets. You know, when you start to see people running into some of these stocks just because you've got you know, this mass distribution on Reddit, you know, there's no dialogue taking place about the market. In those chat rooms, if you remember correctly, there would be a dialogue. How many shares outstanding are there? Who's running it? What's the management like? Those would be the questions that are being asked. You know, in that Reddit crowd, you don't see those questions being asked. Basically, it's what are we buying today?
Right.
and that is the type of mentality that leads to disaster. Okay. And look, you know what? We all know everybody in the world cannot be a zillionaire. It's not going to happen. All right. The world doesn't work that way. So, you know, when the day of reckoning comes, I want people to understand that it's a two-way street. You know, they're enjoying these things. And Tilray is a good example. I've owned Tilray for quite a while. So I've owned it from a lot lower. And I've watched this craziness, with the mishigas. All right, as my friends call it, the absolute nuttiness that's been taking place in this thing. And, you know, look, there's part of me that says sell it. You know what? Sell it over 50. You got, look at the thing. On the other hand, I don't know if I'll ever get back in. All right. See, that's just right. It. And that's the, you know, that's why I say they're volatile, but these are the types of stocks, especially those volatile stocks. And I'll leave Tesla out of it because that's a different world altogether because I've never been able to buy it. All right. But you look for these stocks on dips. You try to buy the dips. All right. So, you know, when the world is looking like it's going to zero, that's when you want to put some money to work. All right. Back in March, you know, I didn't know what to buy, but I knew I had to buy something because the market was dipping. So I just bought the index. All right. You know, because I already owned individual issues. So, but that's really, especially with the marijuana stocks, I think, but I like Tilray. I like Canopy. These are two that I own. You know, I think there are a lot more out there that I've looked at. Those are the two that have always caught my eye, though, and I think Aurora is another one. I think I've got a small piece of, but I've dabbled. It's not a big portion of my portfolio, but I do think that I can wake up one day and see those stocks considerably higher.
Right, we're talking with Jack Rougian, chief economist and co-founder of UCX. We'll be right back with more Alpha Trader. All right, welcome back to Alpha Trader. We are joined today by Jack Rougian, chief economist and co-founder of UCX and chairman of the Global Smart Commodity Group. And Jack, we covered a lot of ground there. And I wanted to bring it back to something you referenced a couple of times, this question of whether we're going to have, you know, inflation or deflation, you know, and what the Fed is doing last week, the 10-year hit 1.2%, highest level since March. There's a lot of talk out there about, you know, commodities being at the start of another super cycle. Do you think that we're at the beginning of a new inflation cycle here, a positive inflation cycle?
I'm watching the dollar, Aaron, that's really what I'm doing, because I think that the dollar is going to tell me whether we're entering that super cycle. The only reason we're going to enter this commodity super cycle is because that we're seeing a debasement of our currency. Let's understand that. All right. It's not because we're seeing demand that's grossly growing off the charts. I mean, we might want to think that. All right. But with the exception of crude oil, and that is a manipulated market, as we all know. All right. The rest of the marketplace right now is sitting back. You were talking about beans and the teens and corn. Well, I've got friends that are farmers, and they've basically told me that they haven't planted nearly as much. You know, there's a lot on the sidelines. So when the demand comes in, you will see production and supply come back to meet it. And that's really when we have to pay attention. So going back to my original statement, let's watch the dollar. If we continue to see dollar debasement, all right, then yeah, I think that we're going to see inflation work out into the economy. On the other hand, if the Fed, no matter what they do, all right, end up with a situation where the dollar starts to work its way back higher, then we might be in a bit of a pickle, all right, because the Fed is going to be left with very little left that they can do. You know, they're going to continue to do what they're doing, but you know, you can only expand that balance sheet for so long. So that's really what I'm watching. You know, the dollar going down is not a bad thing. It's the velocity at which it goes down. And if we continue to see debasement, the question is, you know, at what point does it stop? So that's a real complicated answer, I guess, to what you just asked. But to me, the real question and where everybody's focus should be is on the U.S. greenback versus the rest of the world's currencies.
And Aaron, I find it interesting that every time we have a Chicago guy on, they always talk the dollar. Jim Urio, Bob Iacino, and now
something
Jack.
About the Chicago guys.
They always come back to, I've got my eye on the dollar. I find that fascinating and probably worth listening to. Keeping with interest rates, and also you were talking about hedging before, we had Mike Novogratz on a couple of weeks ago, who's now heavily involved in crypto, but he's an old global macro guy and keeps his eye on interest rates and currencies. And he told us a couple of weeks ago, when I saw he tweeted out again over the weekend, he's like, the big trade for him is shorting euro dollar futures a couple of years out, or about a year out, because he thinks the Fed is going to be tightening a lot sooner than everybody thinks. He thinks you've got, right now, what you've got is the Fed very easy. You've got another stimulus package, and you've got the vaccines taking hold. And we're about to see an explosion in economic growth. And he says the trade to make right now is a short 2022 euro dollar futures.
Well, you know what? You can go broke taking the other side of his trades. I'll tell you that right now. but I will say, you know what? The market's got to prove it to me. Let me take a step back. Since 2010, I think everybody, without question, has miscalculated the rate of inflation. All right. I don't care who you are. I remember talking with Tom Sosnoff, who I think is one of the smartest guys around. I remember talking to Tommy back in 2011, 2012. And he turned to me and he says, you know what? It's going to be inflationary. How can it not be? You've got zero interest rates. How can it not be inflationary? All right. So everybody can see that. I remember talking to Art Cashin, God bless him. All right. Out in New York. And he turned to me and he goes, Jack, how can you not be worried about inflation? All right. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, they're right. But we miscalculated it. So I guess right now, that would be my big concern. The trade that you're talking about is a very crowded trade. I think a lot of people are expecting that. All right. So going back to where I came from, what wouldn't you expect? Well, you wouldn't expect it to not work. All right. You wouldn't expect it to all of a sudden see, prices starting to stabilize and coming off a little bit. And before you know it, we're looking at 1.5% CPI and PPI instead of the 2.5% that Jay Powell wants. You know, what then? And that's what I worry about. So, yes. Do I take the other side of that trade? No, but I don't think that it's a guaranteed winner. If anything, I'd be more concerned because I thought for sure that, you know what, the guaranteed trade from 2010, if you asked me what the guaranteed trade was, I'd say short the 10-year, short the euros, 2010, right. Next decade, all right? And it did not happen, all right? So anyway, but I'll leave it at that.
And I'll point out too that we talked about Japan earlier, and I can remember as early as like 1994 saying the sure thing bet is to short JGBs, 10-year JGBs when they were yielding whatever, 2.5%, 3%. And here we are 25 years later and JGB yields have done nothing but gone down for, you know, three decades now. So, yeah, what seems like a sure thing isn't always so.
And that's really where we're at now. I want you to think about what you hear on TV, what you hear from analysts, what you hear from all the talking heads. You know what I mean? There's a lot of, you know what, the markets go, go, go. You can't fight the Fed. And look, a lot of it I agree with. You know, when people say you can't fight the Fed and there's a lot of easy money out there, there's no competition for dollars. Let's face it. Where are you going to go? But on the other hand, I there are a lot of red flags. All right. Those red flags tell me that unless we see a shakeout, and I don't know how hard that shakeout will be, but we need to see a shakeout where we scare people because it's not this easy. And you know what? When people tell me that they have been making easy money, or worse yet, I'm playing with the house's money. Yeah. You know what? I always tell them it's never the house's money. Once you make it, it's your money. Don't have it. My son said that to me. He goes, Dad, I'm playing with the house's money. I go, no, you are not.
Right? It's paper money, right? It's not your money until you sell, right?
Well, that's like the CEO of Wolf of Wall Street, right?
I never liked that line. I remember one of my old friends, Dennis DeCore, one of the best traders I ever knew, used to say that. I'd book a profit. I'd be on the phone with him and I'd make a few $1,000. I'd say, I'm playing with the house's money. He said, don't ever say that to me. Is it in your account? I said, yeah. He goes, it's your money. All right. It's not the house's money.
Exactly.
So anyway, but that's, as a trader, I needed to make sure I reinforced that mentality. But you remember, it's not a game and people are treating it like a game. And that's, again, going back to it, that's one of the red flags that I see.
All right. So before we wrap, Jack, we appreciate you being here on a market holiday. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, this coming week and who knows, you know, there's probably going to be something else that I'm not going to mention that's going to be the story this week. But, you know, there is some economic data. We've got retail sales on Wednesday and the PPI coming out, talking about inflation numbers. Then Thursday, Walmart earnings coming out. Obviously, it's a big look at what retail is doing. You are, among many other things, an economist. There is a case to be made, and Steve and I have talked to a few guests about this, that you have, you know, the Fed's got the pedal to the metal. The stimulus package looks like it's going to be, you know, coming through Congress bigger than expected, you know, not $600 billion, but, you know, $1 trillion+. And, vaccines are starting to make their way out to the community, that we could have an explosion in economic growth this year. As an economist, what is your outlook for GDP, and, you know, what's going to be the big tells for you?
I think, well, number one, I think a lot of what we're expecting has been pulled forward, especially with earnings and expectations, let me put it that way, in pricing. Right. I can see a lot of that pricing actually staying constant. I had a 4,000 S&P target. We're very close to it. I don't want to get too greedy because we're hitting it early in the year. But what I do worry about is PPI and CPI. I think that first look when we look at PPI this week is really going to be a telltale. Pay attention to that. GDP, remember, is going to be very volatile. And I always keep telling people, don't get fooled by what we see with these GDP numbers. I mean, we could see a 4 or 5% print, but the reality is that, unless we start to see unemployment start to pick up, unless we start to see prices stabilize the right way, look, even if we want inflation, we can't see it spike. All right. And if it starts to spike, the Fed's going to have to react. If the Fed reacts, you're going to see the housing market start to suffer. You're going to see Main Street suffering even more than they are. So, there's a lot that worries me as far as the explosion of activity that's going to take place. I think everybody's expecting that. I think everybody needs to get out. Well, the real question is it going to be short lived? Is it going to be one of those things where we end up with maybe, that real quick aberration, that spike up? Or is it going to be something that that ends up being the paradigm shift, the fourth turning, as it were, all right, for those that are fans out there, that ends up seeing something completely different emerge from where we're at? And in that case, look, I'm not all that convinced of these rosy expectations. And I'm one of the biggest bulls you'll ever meet. All right. Because we don't see the level playing field. I see my friends that have got money in the markets doing great. And I see friends that own restaurants that are suffering. You talk to, right, to Jimmy Uriel's got a place. He's got a lot of families that he's trying to feed with that place of his. He can't put them to work. All right. I mean, there's a lot of pain and suffering that goes out there. And I think it's so very important to keep that in mind. We've done some irreparable damage this last year. I don't care if it's to the educational system. I don't care what. Look, it wasn't necessary. That's for history to debate. All right. But it's going to take more than just vaccines, all right, to get us into the go-go 20s. It's going to take a real structural shift. All right. And if that happens, then you're going to see interest rates going higher. And if that's the case, then, the Novogratz trade is going to be absolutely right. But you're going to have a Fed that is going to be fighting this invisible, monster of inflation, in which case things can really slow down hard. You've got two different scenarios here, like I said, and that's kind of where I started from. That inflationary scenario, which is probably healthy for the market down the road, but it will debase the currency, all right? And the one that scares me is this doesn't work, and we end up in a Japan-type scenario like the 90s.
Right. And again, you were here back in June and you reminded me of another quote I pulled out from the transcript from that podcast. You said, quote, there's a big disconnect right now taking place between what's out there in the economy and what's happening on Wall Street. And that disconnect cannot continue. It sounds like you're still of that mindset. And either you said, either the economy is going to get quite a bit better or the stock market will get hit over the next few months.
Yeah. And if you remember, we did see that. And if it wasn't for the Fed coming in and bailing out the entire world, basically, they would probably could have gotten a lot worse. But going ahead from here, I still see a lot of that taking place. The Fed can't do what they're doing forever. All right. Eventually, you can't keep giving a patient steroids. Eventually, you've got to take that patient off of those steroid treatments. When that happens, it could be very rough. And that's one of the things that we have to prepare ourselves for as economists. We have to prepare ourselves for as a trader and an investor. You have to prepare yourself for that.
Right. And that gets back to your earlier point about, your position. You're not fighting the Fed, but you've got some leveraged inverse ETFs as a hedge because nothing goes on forever. Right.
That's exactly
you gotta protect
right.
yourself. Right. All right. Nothing goes on forever, including this podcast.
Our guest Excellent has been, segue there.
Thank you. Yes. Our guest has been Jack Boroujian, chief economist, co-founder of UCX and chairman of the Global Smart Commodity Group. Jack, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jack.